Promise Cool Kids signing out. Have an amazing day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Hello, I'm Neil Allen from Hudson, New York. You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
Signal Hill, Newfoundland, Thursday morning, December the 12th, 1901.
Sono lieto di poter rievocare in poche parole le esperienze delle prime trasmissioni radiotelegrafiche a grandi distanze da me felicemente eseguite attraverso l'Oceano Atlantico il 12 dicembre 1901. Queste esperienze provarono conclusivamente che la trasmissione e la ricezione delle onde elettriche non erano affatto limitate, come a quel tempo credevano tutti gli scienziati alle brevi distanze, bensì potevano essere utilizzate per le comunicazioni fra il vecchio ed il nuovo mondo.
Welcome, everybody. We're here to speak with a great musician named Mark Rebo. He's an American guitarist and composer. His work has touched on many, many styles, including no wave, free jazz, rock, Haitian, Cuban music, all kinds of stuff. He's known for collaborating with all kinds of wonderful musicians, notably Tom Waits, Elvis Costello, and John Zorn. He's been at this for about 40 years and has become one of the most influential and, to my ears, one of the most expressive musicians in New York's downtown scene. It's a really great honor to welcome Mark Rebo to WGXC. And just want to say Mark is here to talk about a concert that's coming up at Hudson Hall on Saturday, February 22nd at 7 p.m., featuring his new quartet, and he'll tell us all about that as well. So, Mark, welcome. Thank you for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So, can you tell us a little bit about what are you bringing to Hudson Hall? Tell us about this new group. Does it have a name? Who's in the group? How you met all these folks? Tell us a little bit about the quartet.
Okay, I'll tell you all about it. This group is, first of all, it does have a name. We're called, although, you know, I don't know, maybe somebody is going to try to convince me to change it because it's a little crazy. We've been calling it a Hurry Red Telephone. I like it. It's,
I do
it's
too.
It's a line from a poem by Richard Sykin, which hasn't yet been, I read it in New York Review of Books or someplace, and it blew me away. And oftentimes I recite the poem that Hurry Red Telephone is from. He's a poet who was already very intense, kind of visionary and emotionally intense. And then he had a stroke from which he wasn't expected to recover language. And he wrote his way back into speech. And this poem with the line Hurry Red Telephone was part of his process of writing his way back into language. And well, you'll see, oftentimes we improvise to that and some other spoken word things. But the rest of it, the band evolved from, it started out with me and Chad, and it started out with us with, after the, Chad was, and I had a band together called Spiritual Unity, and yeah. Several members of that band died. First, Roy Campbell Jr., trumpet player, late and lamented trumpet player. And then we continued as a trio with the bass player, Henry Grimes, who was one of Albert Eiler's East Side musicians. And eventually Henry was quite old.
Yes.
You know, but he became unable to play eventually and, you know, very sadly. And he died in the first year of the COVID epidemic. And Chad and I had been looking for a way to continue that playing together, continue that music ever since. And this is the response. So I've been doing it with a number of different instrumentations. We've often used Hilliard Green on bass, and we've we've performed at times with James Brandon Lewis, amazing,
sure,
amazing tenor saxophonist on tenor. Anyways, both are busy musicians, and also I wanted to try to I'm trying different kind of sonic landscapes, and I did a gig with Ava. I've played with Ava Mendoza several times. She's an amazing guitarist, and she sat in with my group, the Young Philadelphians, with Jamaluddin Takuma and Calvin Weston. We played a gig together, and it went great. And then more recently, she played with, I did a retrospective of my stuff, and I revised, I redid and much earlier stuff of mine from these groups, Breck and Rootless Cosmopolitans, and we performed it at the Elbphilharmonie in Hamburg, and that went great. I cheated, because it was supposed to be a retrospective, but we made the stuff much better than it was originally. So, so that was very exciting, and I wanted to continue. I wanted to continue with do these tours with Ava and see how it evolves as a two guitar thing.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, because I wanted to ask you about what it's like. You know, I certainly know, you know, have seen you with multiple guitars in larger settings, but I'm curious what it's like for you to play with another guitar player in a smaller setting, in a quartet setting. What's that like for you?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, hey, I like I like the Yardbirds. Two guitars can sound well together if it's done properly.
Yeah.
If this is a setting which involves a lot of improvisation. So I like the blend of two guitars. Well, first of all, you know, with there's such a wide range of what guitar means. Especially electric guitar can have a whole lot of different meanings depending on what the guitar is, what the amp is, and what pedal you happen to be stepping on. Needless to say, who's playing it. So I'm looking to have the capacity to do a certain kind of blend, you know, but then also to have distinctive voices, like to have the ability to either do, you know, have it blend as if it's one instrument, but also to have I noticed in the Ornette Coleman's Primetime Band, when you listen to those recordings, each instrument has its own sonic space. And so that they can improvise away in their own sonic space without it becoming unlistenable, and too chaotic. And with everybody's thing being identifiable, and so I'm looking for both of those things, and I'm sure well, they've already happened, you know, so that's what I want to continue. I neglected to mention Sebastian Steinberg, who I'm super excited to be playing with. He was part of, well, first of all, he was I first heard his playing with Joe Morris's trio, and he's one of those players, you know, some bass players, a lot of bass players are great, but they're very, you know, functional. They do the job of bass player, but certain bass players like Henry Grimes and Sebastian Steinberg, their voices are just so unique, and they, you know, they're doing something beyond just support, yet they're also supporting, you know. So so Sebastian was in some groups that was in Shrek, and I don't know, I went through a whole bunch of I used to think I had to rename the band every time the drummer quit, which was also in the early 90s, I experienced a kind of Spinal Tap type period of exploding drummers. So Sebastian was in, what did we had? I think we called one of the groups Old Baby because Dougie Bound was the drummer. And then we called another one Human Tripod. I think Sim Kane was the drummer. No comment, okay? it was a trio, okay? So anyways, yes. Yeah, so I played with Sebastian in those bands, and we had, like, great rapport, and he's a very intuitive, natural musician. You know, he hears something, and then he plays it. But he ran away to the West Coast, and so he was working as a studio. He's been working with all kinds of super famous people as a studio musician out there, and so I'm lucky to be able to get to steal him back for our nefarious purposes.
Oh, we like nefarious purposes, of course. Let me ask you, are you going to be continuing with some of the Eiler-esque stuff you did with Chad, or is this all new material?
Well, it's a bunch of it is new material, and whether we do specific Eiler tunes or Coltrane tunes, that is the, you know, I mean, Eiler's band remains for me the ideal, you know, an ideal. It's an ideal way of improvising. You know, it's, you don't have to have this complicated expert ski slope of chord changes that you're that you're attempting to navigate. Eiler gave the improvisers more room harmonically. You know, the changes were not so vastly different than in church music or rock or different kinds of traditional brass music. And he gave them a much wider space in which to improvise, but at the same time kept it collective, you know, kept an emphasis on and kept it thematic. You know, he had compositions, and the compositions were also, you know, were complicated in their way, but not in the predictable way that a lot of bebop had become by then, you know, which was AABA form. Eiler's forms would be ABACADAE, you know, with all leading to all functioning as a diving board into a sea of improvisation.
So, and I would also say one of the things that I note about Eiler's music, which I also feel very strongly about yours, is this, there's sort of a raw expressivity to it. And the emotional, you know, the emotional content doesn't get lost by way of technical prowess, if that makes sense. And I'm just sort of curious. Yeah. I'm curious, you know, when I hear your music, I hear tremendous amounts of emotion pouring out of your guitar. And I'm wondering, today there are so many musicians who have so much great chops, great technical prowess, but, you know, sometimes that emotional content gets lost in the flurry of notes and technique. And I'm just sort of wondering if you can talk a little bit about sort of the balance between technique and emotion and sort of raw power versus subtle nuance and just some of those, I guess they're ideas that I hear in Eiler's music and I hear in your music as well.
Well, you know, when people are talking about Eiler's music, they always talk about process oriented art, you know? So the point isn't, I think that the point in Eiler's music was not to create this aesthetically perfect commodity that you could then sell as a record.
Exactly.
The point of music was to bring the audience, you know, in the same way that was what the point of the music was to bring the audience, first the musicians, and the audience to a point of transcendence. So in that sense, it's more like religious music. It's yes. The process of getting there and where you get emotionally, spiritually. In this sense, I think that, you know, I always feel like my gigs are rituals, you know, and where if it works, it brings people to another place, you know. Yeah. And that's the goal, not to, you know, anyways, that's the goal. That's what I should end the sentence there, because that's it, you know. We need that. We need that. We need a ritual, you know. We've been stripped of it in other areas of life.
I agree. It reminds me of that great line by John Cage, you know, process, not object. And I think that's what you're sort of talking about here is creating an experience that is not, that is sort of beyond a tightly packaged, nice little commoditized item that can be bought, sold, and traded and stuff. But you're doing something that I think taps into almost a more ancient need that we have for community and for ecstatic experiences to some extent. Ecstatic is maybe not the right word, but I think religious experience.
I think it's a perfectly good word. I think okay. It's a perfectly good word. And, you know, that said, there are techniques for doing this, you know. I mean, there are techniques for, you know, this is art. You know, there is an art to producing a ritual, a good, you know, a good voodoo priest knows a lot about how it's not just they're walking and saying, now I'm going to be very emotional. You know, there are certain rhythms. Chess Smith, who plays drums in, we have a band together called Ceramic Dog, yep. Is, you know, he's a much in demand voodoo drummer for voodoo ceremonies on a weekly basis. And, you know, and I have some connection with Haitian music yes. also through my teacher, late teacher, Franz Casseus. And there are moments, you know, there are techniques for producing, this experience. It's an art, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, I'll talk about Eiler, you know, Eiler or Ornette or the master drummers of Jujuka, you know, often use repetition, you know, to produce it. Haitian drummers use, it's not simply repetition, but moment that a phrase that was framed rhythmically, you're hearing it in 6/8, and all of a sudden you're hearing it in 5. And at the moment that switches, that you're hearing the same thing in a completely different way of hearing, is the moment of enchantment, you know? So there are, you know, there's also, you know, the free improvisers have the great free improvisers have mastered the uses of disjunction and chaos, but it's not only for its own sake. It's not only for its own sake, but it's also because what that triggers in people who are trained their whole lives to create musical order is the immediate creation of new orders, you know? So it has an effect on the musicians. It has an effect on people who must seek pattern, who are inherently hardwired to seek pattern, to seek order of some type. But it can be a new, it's the idea that something is created in front of your very ears. That's what's important.
Well, I think that also gets to, you know, what people talk about, what happens in the brain when you're hearing all this, these new patterns. There's something that called neuroplasticity, and your brain, at least my brain, it just craves the new patterns, and it is just always looking for those new patterns. And so is that what's going on when you said it sort of changes those patterns, sort of change the way you play and change the way the musicians think? Is that what you're getting at?
Well, I don't know what's going on in what's left of my brain, but but something's going on in there, you know, and that's what we aim. I know that there are effects that allow people to experience being together in a room and experiencing something together that's intense and emotional.
We're here with Mark Rebo. He's going to be performing at Hudson Hall on February 22nd at 7 p.m. with his new quartet. It's a fantastic quartet featuring Chad Taylor on drums, Sebastian Steinberg on bass, and Ava Mendoza on a second guitar. And we're here talking with Mark about that gig and about 40 years of making music. You have such long-standing musical connections. You know, I'm thinking about Chess Smith and Chad, of course, and Zorn and Shahzad Ismaili. And I'm just wondering, what does it take? You know, what does it take? What are the qualities that are required to sustain such longstanding musical relationships? Because I can imagine that could also be tough. It can be very rewarding and good, but it can also be tough. It's almost like, you know, working with friends, doing business with friends can sometimes be a challenge, right? There can be fraught with all kinds of problems. What do you think is important to keep those relationships so many decades you've been working with these folks?
Well, you know, if you're having fun, you just keep doing it, you know? You know, before you know it, if you don't die, all of a sudden you can say it's been decades, you know?
So, right.
But yeah, that said, I mean, one day I was on the train with Shahzad and Chess, my bandmates in Ceramic Dog, and I realized, oh my God, you guys are my oldest long-term relationship.
Right.
You know, and part of me thought that was a little sad, but then I realized, no, it's not sad at all. It's wonderful. You know?
Well, it's wonderful for us. But, I can tell you as a listener, it's wonderful.
Well, thank you. You know, thank you. I don't know, what's the secret? You have to like each other's bad jokes. That's the secret.
Speaking of bad jokes, I have a memory. I'm going to date myself, and this memory could be a false memory, but I have a memory of you playing in a place, and I'm guessing this is the late 80s or something. It was an old converted gas station in the East Village. I think it was called 2B.
Oh, my God. I organized with Elliot Sharp, right?
You were in a hole. You were playing in a pit. You were in the pit that I think that was underneath where the car would go on top, where the mechanic would be. Is that, do you remember, is I, that, did that, did
I don't
that all
remember
really
that
happen?
Part. I do remember the gas station, and like that was a moment in the 80s. What happened was, like, I remember, like, Elliot and I had grown disenchanted with musical capitalists for whom we were playing, club owners. You know, we decided, okay.
Are you talking about one club owner in particular who had a place on Houston Street?
Yes. And so we decided, okay, we're going to screw the middleman. We're going to do this ourselves. So Elliot somehow rented the, you know, we got a sound system and there had been a couple of gigs in this gas station, abandoned gas station on Avenue B and like 2nd or 3rd
Street. It was 2nd Street because it was called 2B, like 2 and B.
Yeah,
and
2B.
2B. Yeah.
Yeah, it was more not to be than 2B because at the time, like that area was, this was before the Tompkins Square police riot, and that area was a basically a heroin supermarket, you know. And it was not a an easy area to be in. So hence, so I think we got the gas station for not so much money. Anyways, we wound up actually losing money because, of course, we had to do our own publicity and rent our own sound. And so we had to come up with a better way to fight capitalism after that. And we did, by the way. But
yes.
But DIY isn't really for everyone. But yeah, I do remember that gig, and it's amazing to be reminded of.
So sorry about that. That
I had forgotten that we were in a pit, and I can imagine that it hadn't been cleaned out, that the auto mechanics hadn't cleaned it out before they abandoned.
Oh, there
ran
was
away.
There were cans of oil and rags all over the place, and yes, you were in a pit 6 feet under or something like that. Yes,
yeah,
I'm very vivid memory of that.
I'm glad I was able to crawl out of it.
Now, do you have a couple more minutes?
I actually have to go.
Okay.
We have to wrap it up.
All right. Then let's just wrap it up.
Okay, so let's say a minute, 2 minutes.
Oh, I just wanted to hear what you were listening to when you were growing up in South Orange, New Jersey. And if you went to Sonny's Bagels and the Famous Deli and, you know, all these really important
Famous Deli,
questions.
Definitely, definitely. You know, what I was listening to, I wasn't particularly, you know, I wasn't particularly hip in any way. Like my junior high school rock band, you know, okay. We played, you know, we started off by playing stuff like Booker T and the MGs, but we also played, you know, the Vanilla Fudge version of Keep Me Hanging On. So, you know, I mean, and we played Inagata De Vita and thought it was cool, you know. So, I wish I could say I was like stealing in underage to go to Slugs to hear Albert Eiler when I was a teenager, but I didn't really have it together. You know, we were, you know, just a bunch of rock and roll idiots who ate hamburgers at, you know, at the White Diamond. And on a very good day. Yeah,
exactly.
And, but South Orange is kind of cool now, but it, you know, I don't know. It was pretty white bread back in the day. But what was in terms of listening, I listened a lot to FMU.
Exactly.
WFMU.
Me too.
FMU.
Yep.
And it was amazing at the time. It was like freeform radio in every sense of the word. And I got hip to a lot of stuff through that. And then, you know, much later I went back and started to, you know, listen to Eric Dolphy and, you know, and Eiler and Ornette in, you know, in a more serious way. But it was great to have a radio station that exposed me to that kind of stuff when I was like 16, you know.
That's when I first found FMU as well, because I grew up in Maplewood. And did you just stumble upon it? Because that's what I did. I stumbled upon it. I had no idea what I was hearing. And that basically changed everything. And here I am on the radio 45 years later or something.
Well, that's how it works. Look, I got a stereo set for my bar mitzvah, you know, so lucky me. That's how it happened.
What synagogue were you part of there? I'm just curious.
Ohed Shalom.
Oh, sure. the conservative synagogue.
Yeah.
They shipped me off to some place, and they shipped me off to some place in East Orange that was not conservative and was very progressive and groovy and sort of soul sucking in a different way.
Well, you know, I haven't gone back there very often,
right.
Perhaps for a funeral. But this launches us on something that we are not going to have time to explore. But, you know, it's going to be ringing up all of our all of our old connections of all types. Trump announced today that he is immediately suspending the AIDS program
yes.
in Africa.
The PEPFAR
and
program.
Not only
yep.
the PEPFAR program, and not only is he doing it, whatever his rationale for doing it, he's doing it in an immediately disruptive way. He took their programs offline immediately, shut it down immediately. This is going to cause immediately, I mean, within the next short year, tens, if not hundreds of thousands of deaths, and risk relaunching the epidemic or pandemic. And it's nothing but whatever his rationale for making the move, the way in which he's doing it is nothing short of genocide. And so I'm going to be ringing up all those old connections, because now's the time to get out there and stop this and many other things that are going on.
Well,
and with that, I'm going to have to dive off because I scheduled something.
Well, great, Mark. But, Mark, it's been a great pleasure speaking with you, and I'm really looking forward to the show on the 22nd of February at Hudson Hall, and that's hudsonhall.org, and you can get tickets and find out more about the show on that website. So, Mark, thank you for being here on WGXC. It's truly a great honor and pleasure for us to have you on our airwaves.
Be well. Bye.
Hey, my name is Legacy from the Perfect 10 Club, and you're listening to 90.7 WGXC Acra. Why did you say
that? Aloha out there in Radio Land.
Hey, this is Andy, host of Crawl Out from the Fallout with Raven Sings the Blues. The show is a monthly roundup of new music, plumbing psych, folk, cosmic Americana, indie, garage, and exploratory titles, alongside enough classic gems to hold it all together like glue. You can tune into the show every second Tuesday of the month from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Nora of Hudson, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You, too, can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by Upstate Films, connecting the Hudson Valley through transformative cinematic experiences. Now home to The Witching Hour, a series that pays tribute to the special hour of night that welcomes the alluring and terrifying. In February, experience the 70s all over again on the big screen with The Stepford Wives, Carrie, Don't Look Now, and The Wicker Man, every Wednesday night. Information at upstatefilms.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, February 14th. Local early morning temperatures range from 17 degrees in Tannersville to 27 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 33 degrees. We have snow reports in 0.6 inches in Kingston, 3.1 in Phoenicia. Today we get some low end wind gusts sprinkled with some random but negligible lake effect snow. A high of 32 happens at 3 p.m. Overnight, cuddle up, temperatures drop to 18 degrees. Saturday, snow is expected all day long. A few inches of snow could pile up by dark. We get a high of 30 at 3 p.m. Overnight, the blanket of clouds keeps temperatures around 28 degrees. Snow falls, delivering that extra couple of inches everyone is looking for. Sunday morning, things get messy. The snow turns to freezing rain, then just rain all day long. You're better off just staying in bed. A high of 35 happens at 3 p.m. Overnight, that turns back to snow, ending as a little more than a nuisance. Monday was looking dry, and we get a high of 27. Sunset today will be at 5:11 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:49 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 5%. Plasma winds will be average at 461 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently weak across the board with an S4 level noise floor. There are low chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 112. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
Sitting by the window, Winston Longs, raining down, clipping the curb like you always do. I know it's you by the sun.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
One of the things that disturbs me the most is that we don't necessarily even know how some of these espionage attacks that have infiltrated our systems have happened. We don't know how to stop them yet.
Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem says America's digital landscape is under attack, yet DHS has put on leave all its workers assigned to secure elections from disinformation and foreign interference. Experts say gutting the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency puts state and local elections at risk. Jurisdictions that rely on federal help with cyber attacks and physical security for election workers. Confirmation hearings for Education Secretary nominee Linda McMahon began Thursday. The former World Wrestling Entertainment executive aims to dismantle the department she wants to lead. Carrie Rodriguez with the National Parents Union warns undermining public school systems would weaken the nation's workforce and especially harm students with disabilities.
These are basic, essential safeguards that ensure every single child, no matter what zip code they have, has access to the education they deserve. And that is something we're going to be playing with.
Only Congress can close a federal department, but President Donald Trump has already directed agencies to find ways tax dollars can better support private and religious schools. Meanwhile, vaccine skeptic Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been sworn in as the newest Secretary of Health and Human Services. Trump has also fired officials who investigate government wrongdoing and protect whistleblowers. The head of the Office of Government Ethics and chairwoman of the Federal Labor Relations Authority were let go this week. The Republican Trump appointed as interim Manhattan U.S. attorney quit rather than drop a corruption case against New York Mayor Eric Adams. The White House says the prosecution was ended so Adams could help battle illegal immigration. The Denver Public School System is the first to sue the administration over sending immigration agents into schools. Superintendent Alex Marrero says pointless raids have already prevented buses from picking up students.
You're not going to find these criminals, these gang leaders, and these rapists that we hear, that is the target, sitting crisscross applesauce on the colorful rug.
The White House insists the aggressive steps are necessary. The Congressional Black Caucus has reintroduced a bill to study reparations for slavery and racism. But this comes as federal agencies ban activities related to Black History Month. Congresswoman Summer Lee of Pennsylvania says America can't ignore its history.
Our government, no matter who is in power, has an obligation to right these wrongs, to provide reparations for descendants of enslaved Africans, to eliminate the racial wealth gap, to uplift the Black community.
I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Tired of being broke down and alone. Can't seem to kick the habit, start getting along. The thoughts deep in my mind, they've taken over now. And I don't know how to regain control. Feels like I'm spinning out with nowhere to go. The world's so harsh and I cannot let go. The things I've done, the hurt I've caused, they haunt me so. And I'm so tired of being broke down and alone. This world, it makes it hard to go on fighting when the fight is gone. That I flew. Last time I was free before I met and lost you. But there was not a time when I was truly free. The pain and trauma always seemed to follow me. I wanted to believe I was when I was young. When the world was still my oyster and I was having fun. But always there was drink and smoke and the urge to run. No freedom from my thoughts without the taste of bourbon. This world, it makes it hard to go on fighting when the fight is gone. But I want to let it go so I can run free at last. I walk along the river and I can see the hope. The beauty in this life, the lengths that I can go. But my mind gets in the way and I cannot cope. Tired of being broke down and alone. But then I hear a song on the radio. A tune that makes me smile and sing along. And the thoughts, they disappear just for a little while. And I remember that I'm here and queer and fighting strong. This world, it makes it hard to go on fighting when the fight is gone. But I want to let it go so I can run free at last. This world, it makes it hard to go on fighting. But I want to let it go so I can run free at last.
For the the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. The opioid epidemic is compounding homelessness in rural America, according to the federal point-in-time annual count of people without shelter. Mary Frances Kenyon with the National Alliance to End Homelessness says addiction and homelessness can trap anyone in a vicious spiral, even folks in small towns.
Not a lot of people realize folks are just often one crisis away from experiencing homelessness in rural communities.
Researchers from Georgia State University interviewed more than 3,000 rural people across 10 states who said they had used drugs. More than half said they had experienced homelessness in the previous 6 months. Georgia State Public Health Professor April Ballard says their research suggests rural homelessness is much worse than they thought.
We need to be capturing accurate estimates so that we're actually dedicating the right amount of resources.
A small Colorado town is replacing 2 miles of irrigation ditch with an underground water pipe, and over it, a scenic trail that connects to its outdoor attractions. Alana Newman explains.
In 2022, Monte Vista received a federal grant to revive the town's main street and spark growth in recreation. Mick Daniel is the director of San Luis Valley Great Outdoors, a local nonprofit.
The community really had the opportunity to put in comment and input and let us know what their hope and vision was for their community.
The group is helping the town build the Lariat Ditch Trail, which will connect downtown to neighborhoods, the high school, and local features. He says it's boosting the town's appeal for local folks and visitors both.
By making it more livable for the people who live there, tourism will be a very pleasant side effect, not a bad side effect.
I'm Ilana Newman.
A South Carolina woman is helping folks devastated by last year's Hurricane Helene, reviving an almost century-old tradition of book delivery. After the storm clobbered the Appalachian foothills last September, Kirsten Crawford Turner decided to make a difference.
I just saw all the devastation, and I thought, what can I do? I cannot rebuild this whole area. That is how it began, with one box of books on my front porch.
Turner started by asking friends and neighbors for gently used volumes, but now she gets donations from readers across the country. In the 1930s, women working for the Works Progress Administration rode pack horses through the eastern Kentucky mountains, bringing books to hard-to-reach places. Turner hasn't saddled up, but she does pack a U-Haul, and she knows it helps.
I think it gives people a respite from their own story to escape into a different story so that they can really process and heal from their personal trauma.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
We plow and sow, we are so low. We delve in the dirty clay till we bless the plain with golden grain and the veil with the fragrant hay. Our place we know. We are so low, down at the landlord's feet. We're not too low, the bread to grow. Too low, the bread to eat. But down we go, we are so low. To the hell of a deep sunk mine, we gather the proudest gems that glow when the crown of a despot shines. And whenever he lands upon our back, fresh loads he deigns. We are far too low to vote the tax, not too low to pay. into palace and church and tower, and then prostrate fall in the rich man's hall, cringe at the rich man's door. We're not too low to build the wall, too low to tread the floor. We're low, we're very, very low. Yet from our fingers glide the silken flow, the robes that glow round the limbs of the sons of pride. And all that we get and all that we give, we know and we know our share. Oh, we're not too low the cloth to weave, the cloth to wear. We're low, we are so low, and yet when the trumpets ring, thrust of a poor man's arm will go through the heart of the proudest king. We're low, our place we know.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. While attacks on democracy norms ensue in Washington, state legislatures have also been busy. We have updates from Utah, Kansas, Indiana, and the contested North Carolina Supreme Court race. Voting Rights Lab reports that the Utah House is considering HB 300, which forces mail-in ballot users to deliver their ballot not by mail, but by hand to an official polling place where an ID can be presented. The elderly, disabled, and other voters for whom returning by mail is their only option would need to seek special permission. HB 332 would withdraw Utah from the Cooperative Electronic Registration Data Center, the subject of far-right conspiracy theories. The Kansas Senate passed SB 4, which requires receipt of mail-in ballots by 7 p.m. Election Day to count, rather than the current 3 days after. An Indiana Senate committee advanced SB 284, shortening early in-person voting from 28 days to 14 days, ending at noon the day before Election Day. The full Senate passed SB 10, ending use of school-issued student identification as ID for voting. In North Carolina, a district court judge dismissed a claim by a state Supreme Court candidate that in a race he lost by 734 votes, as many as 65,000 voters were ineligible. A federal appeals court may revisit it. We've linked the Voting Rights Lab tracker at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Looking through the glass by the window, beneath the shadow of the moon. Is this the start or the end? Listen to the rain against the window. Wish it could wash away the gloom.
no more need to pretend. If the saints are gone, there ain't no song. If the saints are gone, you're on your own, lying with a cheek to the window, looking to walk beyond the room, looking at last to see a friend. If the saints are gone, there ain't no song. If the saints are gone, we're forsaken all. If the saints are gone, you're on your own. Our own, on your own. Our own. So we better stick just around the bend. If the saints are gone, right that wrong. If the saints are gone, we're awake and all. If the saints are gone, we're not alone. Oh.
Your good news for a good planet. An island of women. For centuries, the fishermen of Kinu have left for extended periods at sea, leaving the women to tend to the farms, raise the children, and run this small island off the coast of Estonia in the Baltic Sea. Over time, men's work became women's work, and this solely female-powered culture flourished through harsh winters, poverty, and Soviet occupation. Deemed Europe's last matriarchy, this Isle of Women fascinates the modern-day world as it transcends gender roles while preserving ancient traditions. The Kinu women take care of everything, from managing births to burying the dead, fixing machinery to performing church services. Children are taught the Kinu dialect and traditional instruments from a young age before attending high school on the mainland. The island's unique culture has been recognized by UNESCO for its oral storytelling, colorful arts and crafts, and unique rituals, which include runic wedding songs that are over 2,000 years old. With only 600 inhabitants left on the island, the culture of Kinu is in danger of disappearing, as many of the younger generations have left to seek their fortunes elsewhere. But for now, mothers persist in handing down their language, songs, and stories, preserving ancient traditions in a world that's racing into the future beyond its pristine shores. And this is Mandy from GoodNewsGoodPlanet.com.